time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Hello there, welcome along to the RTE Soccer Podcast. With us today, the dashing Paul Curry, the pride of Cork, the People's Republic of Cork, our correspondent Tony O'Donoghue, and James O'Toole, central defender par excellence in those famous five-a-sides that we used to have once upon a time. Lads, we're going to get straight down to business because that's the kind of podcast this is. So I have three words written down here. Obviously, we've two matches played now under Stephen Kenny. Bulgaria 1, Ireland 1. Republic of Ireland 0, Finland 1. So the three words, and I just want you to answer me the word that sums up the two matches, if you know what I mean. So the three words are underwhelmed, satisfied, or encouraged. So just give me the one-word answer, and then we'll elaborate. So we'll start with James O'Toole. So are you underwhelmed, satisfied, encouraged?
Encouraged.
Paul Curry. Underwhelmed, satisfied, encouraged?
Satisfied for me.
And Tony O'Donoghue, where do you sit? Are you underwhelmed? Are you satisfied? Encouraged?
It's an underwhelm for me, Adrian.
Whoa. Okay. So one of each there. Okay. Let's start. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's start with James. So, James, why are you encouraged? Because clearly you are.
I think that when you consider how much time Stephen's had with these players, the fact that they're all in pre-season at varying levels of pre-season at the minute, you can be encouraged by the fact that he is trying to get them to play a proper style of football, which we haven't seen in many years. Yes, they may not be as quick on the ball at the moment, but I'm going to put that down to ring rustiness and not playing, being match fit, pass the ball and being as sharp. But I'm very, very encouraged to what I've seen. And you can see what Stephen's idea, his philosophy, being put on a group of players who bypass midfield for the large part of the last 10 years.
Okay. I actually would be in the satisfied category, a bit of both, in the sense that I was probably expecting a bit more, but then I understand that, you know, the restrictions, the amount of time. The only thing I'd say, James, to what you just said is that so many other international teams, they're all in the same boat as well. Players are rusty. I know it's a new regime and a lot of managers have plenty of time with their players or have had and to implement their style. And that's the challenge. But look, we'll come back to that. Tony, I'm intrigued by yours. Underwhelmed.
Because why? I think when Stephen Kenny took over, we had great expectations. And he went along to fueling those expectations because he was talking the talk. There's no question about that. He didn't want us to be seen as a British-style team. He didn't want us to be caveman-like in our tactics. And I guess for now, even though there's plenty of reasons, I understand excuses, if you like, or the reasons that it didn't happen. But so far, he's overpromised and underdelivered. Apart from Darren Randolph, I don't think anybody can be especially happy with their performance over the two games. Any of them who played in both or some who only played in one. I look at Matt Doherty, for example. And yes, he's been outstanding for Wolverhampton Wanderers. He's just got a big move to Tottenham Hotspur. And he's chosen ahead of the captain Coleman. So that's the first big call by Stephen Kenny. And in all truth, can we say that Matt Doherty lived up to his billing, to his expectation? Sadly, no. Shane Duffy just got his big move to Celtic. And, you know, maybe we're hoping that regular football there will restart his career because it had stalled at Brighton. And the two centre-halves were probably responsible in the main for the two goals that we conceded, one to draw a match and one to lose a match. And Enda Stevens, who, again, has been one of the bright sparks in the last campaign in the Sheffield United season gone past, and he looked so off the pace. It was astonishing. It was, you know, that guy needs a holiday, not a week before the Premier League starts again. And then we look at our midfield. James McCarthy is back, and that should be great news. And, you know, to believe that it's been 4 years since he pulled on the shirt for Ireland, for many, many reasons, injury, etc. Stephen called him an exceptional player. Perhaps he should be one of the great Irish players of his generation. And on the evidence of the Bulgaria game, he's not. And then he didn't even make the second game because we're still managing his injuries. And then, you know, I was delighted to see Adam Eade getting his chance. He's 19 years of age. I'll give him a pass on that. The same with Aaron Connolly. But you were hoping that, you know, Aaron Connolly could do what he's done at under 21 level or do at Premier League level, scorch past people. When he saw an eye for goal, a bit like his very opening game against Georgia, he didn't finish. Now, tough chances, and chances were so few. But I had great hopes, high expectations, and those hopes, I'm afraid, were dashed.
Okay, and that's a strong case made there by Tony. In the satisfied camp, Paul Carey, are you swayed by what Tony has had to say at all?
I understand where Tony's coming from, and I'm sure that will be echoed by many Irish fans. I guess when I say satisfied, I'd say fairly satisfied, Adrian. You know, a lot of new faces came in. We've got a lot of inexperienced players, not even just at international level, but also at club level. Like, you think the likes of Ida or Connolly or Malumbi in particular, who came in, they haven't even racked up 100 first team appearances themselves. So they're very, very new to the scene. And I just think when you've a number of players who haven't played together before, and new management, new systems, really short space of time together, it was always going to be difficult. And sometimes we can be maybe a bit greedy in our expectations. And I know Stephen has set the bar very high, but it's very unlikely when you throw that many players into a new system that it's gonna look brilliant and it's gonna be wonderful first time out. I think this is a style of play in particular that's gonna need time. And when you go from changing up so much from what Mick was about and the way we set up, that's gonna be foreign to a lot of these players. And you go through even our back four, like Matt Doherty's used to playing in a five, Enda Stevens used to playing in a five, John Egan is used to playing in a five, and Shane Duffy, by and large, at Brighton last year would have played in a five. So This is completely foreign to players for the last season in particular, and it's just going to take time to bed in. And unfortunately for Stephen, with Slovakia around the corner, we're going to need to see a drastic improvement based on last night. But I would still be tied in the fact that there was a change, and it was a change that I believe that we needed to see in regards to system, and hopefully time will certainly see further improvements.
Okay, well, let's hear what Stephen Kenny had to say. He spoke at the press conference after that loss to Finland on Sunday.
I was experimental in the two games, I think you will agree. I think we wanted to do better results-wise for sure in the two games. Like, I can't deny that. But I can't say I was just looking to the long term, because that wouldn't be true either. I think, you know, I've been looking towards Slovakia next month, and really, overall, didn't think our attacking options, you know, previously haven't looked at, said that we need to. We need to see exactly what attacking options we have and a midfield options for the game against Slovakia. So we've looked at quite a few players, and the games are not friendlies. They're Nations League games, so you don't take them lightly. We want to win.
James, that's Stephen Kenny speaking after the 1-0 loss, his first home game in charge, ending in defeat at the hands of Finland. You say you're encouraged. In terms of individual performances over the course of the two games, who put their hand up in terms of Slovakia, who we may not have really seriously considered as a starter prior to the Stephen Kenny era? Because I'm asking the question mainly because, say, you know, a lot of hope around Jason Malumbi, and he made his debut and he did well, he did fine, but I think he conceded afterwards himself that he perhaps wasn't up to real match sharpness. Harry Archer hadn't played for Ireland since March of last year, the away game in Gibraltar, and it's largely been out of the picture for some time. But in terms of food for thought for Stephen Kenny in terms of Slovakia, do you get the feeling he's going to go back to the sort of tried and trusted, that David McGoldrick will start, possibly even maybe even a James McLean, that he'll go to the old guard rather than any of the guys who've come back, albeit James McCarthy will in all probability start in Bratislava?
It's difficult to say. I think Connolly did very well. I think Malumbi, at Millwall last year was very, very good, played really well for Millwall, got a taste of what it was to be a tough midfielder. I think the likes of them guys may well. I think, as you suggested, McCarthy, I think Stephen has a great relationship with McCarthy. He goes back to Dunfermline with McCarthy in his team, so he has a great relationship with him and he trusts him. So I think we can get him fit. I think the main thing about this is, come that game, they'll all be back into league action. They'll be game fit, they'll be match fit for that. The other night, and for the two games, they looked like a group of players that had training wheels on and were afraid to kind of express or go quick. Everything seemed a little bit slow with the passing and trying to get that idea of the game. So I think a bit of match fitness goes in. I think McGoldrick will come in. And considering, Tony might be able to answer this one. I think he may have had half a training session with Stephen Kenny after he came into the camp late. But I think he will come in and he gives you that target up front. But I think Malumbi could well start. Connolly, I think, will start instead of James McLean. But it just depends on, does Stephen, as Paul suggested, that a lot of these guys playing a five at the back, does he kind of go for that for the Slovakia game? He's tested two groups of three in the midfield now, so he knows generally what he wants. But I think there's only one or two players you could say will definitely start from the other night.
Tony, how do you hear what James is saying? Because I guess I'm just wondering as well, he inherited this situation, and obviously the coronavirus has such an impact on world football, not just in Ireland. But in terms of the Slovakia game, taking over as manager, looking at and talking about a new way of playing, and Ireland getting on the front foot and controlling the football and being a possession-based team. And, you know, other managers in the past would argue that they also try to retain possession. But at international level, you know, it's easy to say it. Actually doing it can be a lot more difficult. But would he have been better advised to perhaps focus on Slovakia and his and put out the team that he wants to play against Slovakia, and maybe concern himself with building for the future and giving the likes of Ida and even Aaron Connolly or whoever game time post that Slovakia game and post possibly a final, and building then towards the next major finals? What do you think?
What I think is, I turned off my microphone there for a second because my young fella came up to offer me a cup of tea, which is working from home, and then I forgot to turn it back on again.
You're underwhelmed.
I believe that the difference is vast between club football and international football, and the way you prepare teams has, you know, by definition, got to be completely different. You could say Stephen could have picked, maybe he did pick the 11 he wanted to start against Slovakia, against Finland. I doubt it, because he's got to see between now and it's now 31 days to that game. How many games are our players going to play? So many of them haven't been regular starters. Obviously, injuries, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that we don't have any injuries to cope with. But also, he did say he wasn't necessarily wedded to 4-3-3. And I think it's a good point that you make. Yeah, a lot of our players have played in a 5. But, you know, to be fair, most of our players have grown up playing 4-4-2 probably most of their lives. You'd like to think that we can develop a player who can be flexible tactically as well. But I think the rustiness was the big factor. And I think as many games as our players or regular starters can play, and if they stay injury-free, that will dictate more than anything what Stephen Kenny will decide for the Slovakia game. If he can go and get to see his players as well, that has been difficult. He did mention that Rory Higgins wanted to go and see Slovakia in action and wasn't allowed, wasn't going to be among the golden number of people into their game, I think, against the Czech Republic. So how he prepares for this, it's completely different. How we would have moulded teams in the past, the likes of Dundalk, would be by working with them day after day and putting his thoughts into action on the training pitch, first of all, and then during a match situation. International football is a different beast, and Stephen will never have seen the level of scrutiny on his every word. You know, he used the word probably as a throwaway comment that Malumbi was chaotic. He meant it in a way that he was more or less kind of saying about the guy, that he brings a lot of energy to the midfield, a bit of a harum scarum. But that word kept getting repeated back to him, and it could be taken in a number of different ways. I thought Malumbi did fine yesterday for his start, and there's plenty more to come for him, no doubt. But it's so difficult. I mean, he's got to, you know, decide who his best players are, I think, and then, is it the players for the system or the system for the players? That's a big call. And as you say, if he is going to change to three at the back, does that bring Coleman back in as one of the centre halves? And does that leave Doherty and Stevens as the wing backs? And how does that impact on your midfield then? And who does he play up front? I hear James saying that McGoldrick probably will start. McGoldrick does a lot of work for us in what would be nearly traditionally the 10 position. He comes a bit deeper, he gets on the ball, and he releases players. I mean, is there, you know, is there a possibility that, you know, you could play McGoldrick and Ida in a new system? And then where do the wingers go? So, I mean, there's much to ponder, and there'll be a huge amount that Stephen will be looking at. And I think he's open-minded enough. He said it last night at the press conference. He's not necessarily wedded to 4-3-3, although that is the tactic that he employed for the two games so far.
Paul, did Stephen Kenny, in advance of, you know, taking on the role, did he talk up this new philosophy, a new way of playing for Ireland too much? Because, you know, previous managers might say, well, we also tried to play football too, but there's a real reality that bites when you put out an international team, because the other teams involved generally have quality players as well. So in talking about, you know, the way Irish football has been perceived over the years, you know, the fighting Irish, the spirit, you know, up and at them, to changing that perception to, you know, possession-based football, the kind of football that he employed at Dundalk and before that at Derry City that everybody loved to see. You know, but by stating that was his intended philosophy of football, has he given himself something of a hostage to fortune?
I don't think so, because Stephen will always look to play that way, and that's the way his teams have traditionally played down through the years, whether that be in the League of Ireland or during European campaigns. He's always stuck to his philosophies. The one thing that I would say on it is that, you know, he doesn't want to take away from the Fighting Irish, and that's something that should be almost a given with our sides, that when we go out that we're difficult to beat. But what he is doing and what lends itself, I guess, to a more expansive game is you can't do both, Adrian. You know, when you start opening up the pitch and you start looking for people to be expansive in their play and to take chances on the ball, you leave yourself a bit more susceptible to conceding goals. So that's just something that we're going to have to accept, and we are going to be a bit more open at the back, and we're going to be looking for players to take risks. I guess then at the further end of the pitch in the final third, what Stephen would be looking for is, you know, it's great to have possession and it's great to own the ball, but it's what you're doing with the ball. And at times, I know James said it there, we were a bit pedestrian. There's no problem with slowing the game down at times and keeping the ball and saving the legs and working the opposition. It's then when you go to create chances, you need to speed it up. And there needs to be a change in pace and a change in tempo to actually go and open teams up. And that's what Stephen is about. And I, for one, don't think he's wrong in that sense. I think the way the game has gone, particularly in the last 5-10 years, it has become about that possession-based game. But what we need to see is we need to see better movement on and off the ball in the final third. We need to work opposition better, and we need to start creating more chances, because when you go back through the last two qualifying campaigns, we haven't scored a huge amount of goals. And I think by changing that, we hopefully give ourselves a better chance of, I guess, progressing and developing as a nation.
Adrian, I know what you're talking about, the way he's put this philosophy out there, but I was talking since last night even with a couple of people and asked them, when was the last Ireland game you actually enjoyed to watch? Does anybody, Tony, Paul, when was the last game you actually sat down and you went, I really enjoyed that game?
Any game that Ireland win, you enjoy, and that's it. And you know, we've had some significant away wins. The one in Wales, Harry Arter did it a couple of times yesterday, where he dummies on the ball, and James McLean came in that instance. Those were great moments. The game in Austria, superb. So I mean, all of us, I hope, want the best for Irish football. There's been some alarming sort of pushback against Stephen Kenny on social media, which I'm almost loath to bring up. But you know, people are saying, you know, immediately on the first defeat, you know, Kenny must go or he's not up to the job. That's nonsense. I think we want a winning Ireland, and if we can manage to see a winning Ireland with a bit of style as well, well, that's the bonus, really. But I think, like most managers, he's probably got to start off against Slovakia. We've got 90 minutes plus, whatever might be added on. Maybe we'll go extra time and penalties, but we've got to keep in that game for as long as possible. So the first thing he's got to fix is not conceding those goals that Paul were talking about. Yes, you need to take risks, but the time you take risks. I love it when Ireland string a couple of passes together, and I must say I've enjoyed a little bit of that in the last two games. But really, it's the wins we celebrate, and those are the great moments. And it's not the same without fans, and it's, you know, we have to take into account the extraordinary circumstances of the pandemic, the extraordinary timing of most of our players being out of season. They had a very long end of season because their season was disrupted with COVID. Then it came back in behind closed doors. They probably had little or no holidays. They're in condition, out of condition, injured, not injured. And then the likes of the players I mentioned earlier who were moving clubs, you know, their head will be turned as well. And then to have to travel away in a bubble, as they did to Bulgaria, and then come back and then play in an empty Aviva Stadium. Strange times. It'll be so much different against Slovakia because the stakes are higher, and it'll be so much different as well because all the Irish games that we remember are the ones with the fans going absolutely ballistic. Let's say, you know, Robbie Brady's goal in Lille or whatever. Those moments are national moments, and they're moments of triumph created sometimes with our backs against the wall. Those are the great Irish moments. Heart and spirit still, that's a book I'm reading at the moment on Irish football, still the defining characteristics. Hopefully heart, spirit, guile, possession and some spectacular goals will be the way going forward. You can laugh.
Exactly, some quality football. Well, let's get another perspective on all of this, because a man who stood shoulder to shoulder with Stephen Kenny for many years is on the line. Former Dundalk manager Vinnie Perth is with us. And Vinnie, I know you were on duty for 2FM on Game On for the game against Bulgaria. What were your impressions of the Finland game? And I guess overall, the two games that we've seen under Stephen, how would you think he'll reflect on both?
I think he'd be quite calm, to be honest with you. I just caught the back end of Tony there, and I think that's been the general consensus by people that, you know, everything that's gone on in the world as such has affected the performances. So I think Stephen is the type of person who, the glass is always half full, so he will have got a lot out of it. There's no doubt that Adam Ida, for argument's sake, is not exactly ready to lead the line for Ireland. But the bottom line is, we have found another guy who was there as part of our pool now, and that's more the glass is half full type of comment. So I expect McGoldrick will play if he fits against Slovakia, but we've got another player now into our pool who was being very good in both games. The service up to him wasn't good, but his hold up play by and large was very good. And so I think there's huge positives from it. Obviously, there's certain things that are concerning. The defending by Shane Duffy for the goal, particularly in Bulgaria, he just looked unfit. He looked like he wasn't ready in match tempo, and that's to be expected. And again, there's a lot of people asking questions on social media. There seems to be more people defending than criticising. It's like you have to tweet in defence to get a few likes, or whatever. The world has gone mad. I think Ireland, Stephen will have got a lot out of it. The whole coaching staff would have got a lot out of it. We've definitely changed how we play. I mean, no one can debate that. Are you better losing by trying to do the right things? Of course you are. So there's a lot of positives. Conley, Adam Ida, and O'Dowda have definitely enhanced their reputation for me. Doesn't mean they're naturally going to start every game over the next couple of years, but they've definitely enhanced their reputation. And I think when I look at, I watched the England game against Iceland, and I hate using comparison to English football, but our players are playing in the Premiership now, thank God. So you compare it to that England game. England were awful. The players looked like they needed game times. It's pre-season. Shane Duffy hasn't played since really competitively, probably since January, around that time. So you'd like to think his move to Celtic, if anybody got benefit out of this, it's probably Celtic. One of the players in international window has got 290 minutes under the belt, and he'll be ready for their game this weekend. So for me, there's a lot of positives in it, and a new way of playing. And I think Stephen will, as I said to you, he's a very positive person, and that's the way he will see it.
If there was a change, Stephen didn't rule out changing the system, perhaps. He said he wasn't wedded to 4-3-3. If he was to change to a three at the back, how would that impact the rest of the shape of the side, the midfield in particular?
Look, there's an argument for that, and one thing I'm not going to do is tell Stephen how to pick the team. I had enough arguments with him for 8 years, and some people know even longer when he was in charge of Derry, I gave him help. But I don't even think it needs to be that radical. I think you could play with Doherty and Coleman. It probably suits our players, if you think about what's happening at the club level. It probably suits them. Like, even McGoldrick's a perfect example. There was a bit of criticism, and I understand why, but he came he was in front of his own goal at some stages. He went into the left full area at one stage. And that's something he does at club level, because he's normally playing in a front two. So there's no doubt that a lot of our players are used to a 3-5-2 system. So I think it can work, but it needs a bit of time. And I certainly wasn't going to... I didn't expect him just to throw a 3-5-2 straight away. I think that's something that they can get to. And it probably suits more of our players. But it needs a bit of time. That needs time on the training ground, and it just doesn't happen overnight. But listen, the other thing is, you know, some of the thing that was thrown at Stephen was, you know, he attacks and attacks and attacks at different stages for Dundalk, particularly in Europe at the highest level. We were pragmatic as well, and we let opposition have it and counter-press them a bit, what Finland done at different stages yesterday. So you'll have different ways of playing the game. He'll understand when to press, when not to press. But I think actually some of the pressing we did, and particularly the front three, if you go back to even the Bulgaria game, the great chance that Aaron Conley had, that came from a press and not letting the opposition have the ball. So I think you'll get the balance right. But there's no doubt, Tony, 3-5-2 is something that he will be edging towards in his own mind, or certainly considering it. But I didn't think this was the right week to do it, and maybe he didn't feel it was either.
And Vinny, in terms of, say, the midfield setup, on the basis that, you know, he, as Tony referenced there, he may consider changing system. He says he's not wedded to one particular system. But in terms of the options available, if he goes with the three in midfield, is it more likely to be the three that we saw in Sofia on Thursday as opposed to the Aviva on Sunday? In other words, that he would go with James McCarthy, Haran and Hendrick. Now, I know Robbie Brady has also put in a strong claim as well, but what do you think?
Again, see, and this is the problem. This is sort of the problem with the modern world. We don't know what's going on. We don't know where people are from an injury point of view before games, because we're not in camp. So there's I presume there's reasons why they select certain systems. And you can't do it on a podcast or radio show. Really, it's not three in midfield. It depends on, and I won't go too depth into it, but it depends on the 6, 8 and 10 position. So Ireland played with 2 number 8s and 1 6 really in both games. I think to play a 4-3-3, most managers prefer to have a number 10 in that position. But I'm not sure Ireland at the moment have a natural number 10 that can play there. And that is part of the problem for the midfield. So therefore, we've seen in both games, Brady coming a little bit deep, Hendrick, Hourihan coming deep and getting the ball. But that can make it easy for the opposition. And if you look at some of the trouble that Adam Oida had, he didn't have anyone in the number 10 position close to him. So the makeup of the midfield, now that he's seen everybody, now that he's had the look of it, he'll have to come up with the best combination in that three in midfield. But for me, I think McCarthy is probably the one that's the certainty of the lot, and because of his performances over the last year at club level. Since January, he's been in the Palace team more or less. For me, he's the form player. But I thought Robbie Brady, again, got really tired yesterday. But I thought Robbie was excellent as well. And Stephen is someone who picks on form. So form is huge. So it is a difficult one to pick. But the problem we probably have is, as I said to you, I don't know whether we've a natural number 10. So we do have to come up with the best combinations of two number 8s and a 6, and it's quite complicated. I think people prefer probably to play with a 6, 8 and 10, but we don't have that option. So it's a difficult one to resolve.
How difficult would it be for McGoldrick to slip into that number 10 role, do you think? Has he got the attributes? Is he capable of it?
Yeah, this is where people don't, and I don't mean this in a smart way, Tony. This is where people, he can definitely play as a number 10. But the problem you have is, particularly at international level or once you go up levels, is has he got the legs to get around and help you when you don't have the ball? And you can get overrun in midfield. So that's why you prefer a natural sort of, in the modern game, a number 10 who can be quite athletic and be a defensive part of your team as well. Because if you look at what happened with Ireland with the two games, probably when the ball turned over in the transition, they struggled from a defensive point of view. They were quite comfortable in the game when they had the ball. But so McGoldrick can definitely play in that system, or can definitely play as a 10 with another striker. But it probably needs to be in a 3-5-2 system, I would say. We've yet to find out, because when we watch McGoldrick playing at club level, it's generally with a 3-5-2 system.
Vinny, you've done your stint as oppositional analyst.
Yep.
Has this here now, what Stephen's done these last two games, has it made it more difficult for our opponents now, because they would have looked at Ireland and gone, well, Ireland's got the same game plan, they always have, they always will. So now, just even the last two games, the way Stephen's put them out, it's going to make Slovakia's job harder to look at Ireland and know what we're going to do.
Yeah, well, I suppose, I don't know whether hard is the right word, James. I think it's now...
it's more work for them.
Now, with the change of manager, they wouldn't have been sure exactly what way. Every manager has their own beliefs and different ideas. So they're not going to be sure, for example, who's going to play in midfield. So as an opposition analyst, you would give your players very details. This is their midfield three. We could probably do that with Slovakia. This is the way they play, this is what they keep the ball, this is how they do. Just off the top of my head, I remember watching Slovakia against Wales, and they'd over 60% of the possession, Slovakia. So they're a possession-based team. They would be looking at Ireland saying, up until this weekend, we'll probably have the ball against these. their own coaching staff would be thinking that way. But now it's flipped, where they'll go, these might come and keep the ball against us. We're going to have to set up traps and work out how we dispossess them, and when we turn it over, how we can hurt them. So it's definitely an advantage in that sense, that we have a different way of playing. And that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of positives from an Irish point of view, and from what happened today, because you can't concede goals when you have the ball, and particularly at international level, it looks like that you certainly need to keep it for long periods if you can. And even if we go back to the good Ireland teams over the last number of years, when we look at whether it was centre-halves of Dunn or Cunningham, all of these guys, they generally kept the ball around the back at different stages for periods just to take the sting out of the game. And I spoke to Richard Dunn about this many times and asked him, what's the difference between Premiership and international football? And international football can be slower, they say, at times. It can be slower and slower, but then all of a sudden it just comes to life, and the pace and attack from different players and the speed just kicks in. So we do need to keep the ball. I think that's the right move we've made as an international team, to keep the ball and be more comfortable keeping it. It's now whether we can flip that over from the attack point of view.
Okay. Well, listen, Vinny, many thanks for joining us with your thoughts on Stephen's first two games in charge. That's Vinny Perth. Tony, we're recording this on a Monday afternoon. News today, Niall Quinn stepping away from his role as Deputy Interim CEO at the FAI. Are you surprised by this?
Not really, no. Once we heard last week that Gary Owens, who's the interim CEO, had decided not to put his hat in the ring for the permanent CEO position, I think then it was only a matter of time before Niall Quinn would follow. Niall Quinn's contract was up after 6 months anyway, and he had said that he'd stay to help implement the recommendations in the governance review and anything else that was required. But really, he was a Gary Owens appointment, if you like. Gary Owens was made CEO and then decided that, you know, Niall would be a good person to help him on restoring confidence, building relationships. Niall would be the front of house man, so to speak. And, you know, it's been more bruising probably for Niall Quinn than he expected. There were quite a few spats. He realised that the League of Ireland can be a very difficult, pugilistic sort of environment to be in. A lot of dog-eat-dog. A lot of people felt that, you know, that they hadn't been doing a good job, Owens and Quinn. In fact, Gareth Kelleher of St. Pat's said, accused him of failing badly, and said that the CEO and the interim deputy CEO had lost the confidence of St. Paris Athletic. That was a time when, of course, the clubs hadn't got back to playing yet, and they were finding it difficult to find agreement with regard to formats and promotion and relegation and whatnot. And Niall had to work through that, which was difficult. Getting the streaming, that was another thing that I suppose he had almost to sell to the clubs, and there was a sense that he wasn't going to get that over the line, and that was a tough one for him as well, and he did. So, you know, there's debit and credit in the Niall Quinn column, you'd have to say. Did he build relationships? Probably not within the game. He's an acceptable face to an extent of Irish football, a legend in his playing days, of course, but he found the FAI a difficult place to work. I think he's got great regard now for the amount of people that work in the FAI and what they have to do. Maybe a lot of people don't realise how many good people are working within the FAI. We only ever seem to see the headline grabbing John Delaney sort of stuff. But there's a lot of good work being done in the FAI, and I think he saw that. But Irish football is always full of recriminations. It was a difficult battleground for Niall Quinn, and so he decided to wish them well and leave the field of battle, so to speak.
All right, listen, let's turn our attention to the SSE Airtricity League, the Premier Division. Big game at the weekend. Was it the title decider? Shamrock Rovers won, Bohemians nil. Daniel Lafferty's rather fortuitous early goal, the difference between the two sides at Tallaght Stadium. Let's get the thoughts of the Shamrock Rovers manager, Stephen Bradley.
This team has shown that they can win playing brilliantly. They can win when they have to dig in, and that's a sign of a really, really good team. Sometimes you can't please people. You know, you have all the possession and they give out. You win, showing great character and organisation, and they give out. Teams have come here and done that against us and being praised to the hilt for us. So I think our players deserve tremendous credit. They've shown whatever the game throws up, whether it's a football game or a scrappy game, they can come out on top.
It's a great position to be in, isn't it? Five clear, eight games to go. Nullified your closest threat.
Yeah, it's a fantastic position. If you offered us this at the start of the year, we'd take your arm off, you know. 5 points clear, but there's still a lot of football to be played. There's still 8 games, and we know that. Big win for us, but we get ready again to go to Cork.
Sure, but a happy dressing room tonight, and after that victory, everybody looked pretty pleased coming off.
Yeah, we're delighted, because it, like you said, it's a Dublin derby. It means a lot to the fans, it means a lot to the club, and then obviously it's first v second, so we're delighted. It's a big 3 points, but that's all it is, 3 points.
Paul Corry, you were there. It's a 5 point margin now in favour of Shamrock Rovers at the top. What did you make of the game?
It was a strange one, Adrian. It was, if you talk about fixtures that really need the fans, it was that Dublin derby. Now, being there, actually, it was an all right spectacle. The quality wasn't huge at times, but it was full of drama, and that's what we've, I guess, come to associate with that Bowes and Rovers fixture. With regards to how the game played out, I think Bowes will be pinching themselves because it was a really, really sloppy goal to give away early on in the match. And I actually thought they bounced back quite well in the first half. And then I thought, particularly then, late on in the second half, that they actually created a couple of chances whereby you felt if they got one, they might have pushed for a second. And certainly looked a better team, Adrian, when Dan Mangini came on the pitch. I can't really work out what's gone on there because he's played so little football this year, and I'm not sure if something's happened with the management team or if he's fallen out with some of the players, but he's just not playing. And when you analyse Bowes, they've played 10 games now and only scored 12 goals. It shows that they're not creating or scoring an abundance. And when you've got somebody like Danny Mangio on the bench, it kind of beggars belief that he hasn't played more. And when he came on the other day, he set up chances, he got involved in the play, and they just looked a better outfit going forward. And I guess every Bowes fan would have been screaming at when Danny Grant got taken down by Liam Scales, because that was a stonewall penalty and that was a massive moment in the game, but a huge, huge 3 points for Stephen Bradley.
It was Mandro auditioning, I wonder. There's strong rumours that Mandro to Rovers is almost a done deal.
Well, I spoke with a couple of people last week, Tony, and when he was involved in the under-21 setup, and this has come from the management team, that he's one of the standout players all week. So if he's standing out at that level, I don't really understand why he's not playing at Bowes. Something has had to have happened there. And when you've got a player of that quality not playing games, and when he's out of contract at the end of the year, you would imagine that if something doesn't change, he's going to be on the move. And when you think of teams who are potentially going to take him, the way Shamrock Rovers play, it's a system that he would slot into really, really well. Who he would nudge out of the team, I'm not too sure. I mean, he might not be guaranteed to start every game, but if he does become available, you would imagine Rovers or Dundalk would snap him up.
There's a couple of things you're saying there, Paul. Like, if you look back a couple of weeks to the team news that came out from Bohemians about Mandroy and the ill language they used, as they said it was a mistake, it was a joke before the game. But that seemed to be, as you're saying, is there a breakup there in communication? That one there seemed a bit odd, but even as you're saying there, like, they did have chances in that game. Like, the two penalty shouts, there's no crowd around. It's not as if anybody's getting pressure on the referee. How has he missed both of them?
Like, Pat Fenlon was chatting, and he was saying that he thought the first one, the one from the corner where Scales had a tug of, I think it was Finnerty's shirt, he felt that one was more of a penalty. But I thought the second one was an absolute stone wall. Like, it was a beautiful ball, a diagonal ball from Casey. Grant's took perfect to take him into the box. And as a centre half, you don't want to do squared up. You don't want to have your feet. And Liam Scales with both of those things, he's knocked it through his legs and he's just taken them down. And I know some of the Rovers players were also saying that it was definitely a penalty. So it's something they got away with, because you just felt like if there was a goal, it would change the flow of the game, and Bowes were really coming into it at that time. But I guess you need a bit of luck to win anything. And if you think back, like, probably about 18 months ago now, Lee Grace got sent off for an absolutely ridiculous red card, where he got done for a second yellow for handball when it hit his chest. So these things have a way of evening themselves out, but a really difficult one, I would say, for Keith Long to take.
Yeah, absolutely. Two big calls in the game, not going the way of Bowes, who finished the game tremendously well and might well have got something out of it. Elsewhere, Waterford 3, St. Pat's 0. James, what's going on with St. Pat's? You have to give Waterford great credit. First win in 6 and a very commanding win. Once they went in front on Friday night, they never looked back. Pat's now really struggling. They failed to win in their last 4 fixtures. Strange days at Inchicore.
Yeah, I'd say Stephen O'Donnell is not the happiest of campers, especially with what's happening. The goal they concede, the first goal, was practically a carbon copy of the goal they gave away to Finn Harps in the FAI Cup a couple of weeks ago, where the ball comes in between two defenders, goalkeeper doesn't know whether he's going to get it or not, and it goes straight through them. And then from then on in, they were lost. Georgie Kelly he's just not getting the service, or he just doesn't look interested. He's not as sharp as he was in the couple of times we've seen him come on for Dundalk and score goals. He just didn't seem at it. And Stephen O'Donnell, I would suggest that the players are over the moon that he was suspended from the touchline, because although you can hear him in an empty regional sports ground, I'd say if he was on the touchline, they might have felt him as well.
Derry City against Dundalk, of course, was postponed because of international call-ups. Tony, Shells 1, Cork City 1. We're recording this on Monday afternoon. As it stands, Finn Harps are at the bottom of the table, but Cork are in a right battle at the moment, aren't they?
I'm seeing shoots of recovery, though. I'm seeing the goal against Rovers, I thought, was the goal of the season so far, even though they lost that game. But to lose against the league leaders isn't such a crime. And the character they showed against Shelburne, I'm hopeful. I know we're running out of games, but I'm hopeful that they can get themselves out of it, or even if they are in playoff territory, that they can get themselves out there. But that's just my my big Cork heart beating faster.
I thought you were going to say my big Cork head. Paul, that relegation battle.
I've been beating that off the wall. You see, I missed a lot of football this week because I was reporting on the FAI. There's the idiosyncrasy of our league as well, you know, to have international games on and your own league on at the same time, to have big football games on and the FAI are having council meetings or major board meetings. It's another sign of how dysfunctional the game is in this country, I'm afraid.
Paul, it is quite tight at the bottom, isn't it? I mean, it can change. You know, any team gets any kind of momentum, they win one or two games. I mean, you know, the gap is quite tight at the bottom.
It is. It's probably a little worrying from, I guess, a Pat's perspective in particular, who are just sitting 3 points above Cork City. But you say it's tight. I can't see those bottom two changing. I think Cork and Finn Harps will be the bottom two teams. Whatever order they end up in will obviously be down to the fixtures in the coming weeks. But like Tony has just mentioned there, Cork have definitely picked up, and he hit the nail on the head there. The goal they worked against Shamrock Rovers is exactly what Neil Fenn will be looking from his team. But they still are quite leaky at the back, and they let in quite a lot of goals. And when you do that, you're always giving yourself an uphill battle to I guess get yourself into games and to take points away from games. But I think Cork and Finn Harps will probably be the two down around there come the end of the season.
Okay, the Women's National League, Bohemians 3, Cork City 4. Great result for Cork. Galway 1, Shelburne 1. The big result of the weekend, Wexford 3, Piemont United 0. And well done, Athlone Town, a first ever win in the Women's National League. They beat Treaty United by 3-2. But James, that win for Wexford Youths over Piemont United, very comprehensive scoreline.
Yeah, it's brilliant as well for the league, because it's the first time the top two haven't actually won a game this season. So I know we're only shortly into it, but it's great for them. Ellen Malloy getting a couple of goals for them, and she's looking to push into the Vera Powell's national team coming up. And then, of course, someone we've seen before in cup finals from Kilkenny, Nicholas Sinnott, getting another goal as well, getting the opening goal in that game. So great result for Wexford. As you said, another great result, the first win for Athlone, which is that's what they need, like 3-2 over Treaty United. Treaty have had a couple of wins over the last couple of weeks as well. But Galway getting that 1-1 draw with Shelburne is brilliant, really. Chloe Singleton scores an absolute smashing goal on 27 minutes, and that just sets them all up.
Thanks to an underwhelmed Tony O'Donoghue, a satisfied Paul Curry, and encouraged James O'Toole. For me, a satisfied Adrian Eanes. Until next week, bye-bye.